Hello, 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 Good Word fam. It's Tisha Lewis, and this is the Good Word podcast. Thank you so much for listening. I'm super excited about today's episode because it's very timely with Foster Care Awareness Month among us. And we are joined now by Dr. Royal Johnson. He's an associate professor of higher education and social work at the University of Southern California. Thank you so much, Dr. Johnson, for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
So everyone knows who listens to the podcast. This is a faith-based podcast, and you have quite the accolades and career and resume. We will go into that because I think it's very, very important to kind of know where you started and know where you've been and know where you're going. But I want to ask you first and foremost the role that your faith has played on your journey.
Yeah, thanks for that question. You know, as a scholar now who studies educational outcomes and trajectories of underrepresented students like myself, I know that if I put my risk factors into a statistical model, you don't get me. You don't get tenure professor at USC. And the only sort of explanation for that is that there has been a higher power that has ordered my steps in a particular way that I would be able to do the things, have the platform that I have to be able to do the things that I do now. So faith and spirituality have been instrumental in overcoming so many challenges and obstacles throughout my personal life to even arrive at some of the professional success that I've enjoyed.
So many times, especially in the science industry and in the medical field, people shy away from talking about their faith. Why so?
Yeah, you know, I think we don't make space, at least in academia, that we, you know, I always tell folks and my students all the time that we don't live single identity lives, but yet our professional worlds and spaces, you know, they expect us to show up in this particular way, devoid of the other identities and aspects of ourselves that shape who we are. And, you know, it's a privilege to work in spaces and places that affirm who you are, all of your sort of identities and your spirituality, your faith, your religion. Not many spaces make room for that.
It is Foster Care Awareness Month, and that is your space. You have worked tirelessly to address racial and ethnic disparities in the country's foster care system. How far have we come? Because I know we have a long way to go.
Yeah, we have so far to go. You know, there are over 400,000 youth in the foster care system. This number has decreased significantly from, say, 15, 20 years ago. But what we know is that there are still racial ethnic disparities in who's represented. So Black youth are disparately represented among those who've been impacted by the foster care system. In 2018, it was roughly 23% of all kids in foster care identified as Black, though they only represented 14% of the population. So we see over-representation of Black youth in the foster care system. And we need to deal with some of those challenges. The other issue is that, you know, though foster care is touted as sort of this protective measure, what I've learned from my research and interviews with students is that it's quite traumatic and harmful, the experiences that some youth have while in care. And so while we've created this system to intervene and, you know, provide temporary out-of-home care for youth who, you know, experience abuse or neglect, when they get in foster care, they experience some of these same challenges. And so we still have a long way to go in dealing with some of those issues.
What's taken so long to have a meaningful curb when it comes to abuse and neglect in the foster care system? Because I feel like this is a conversation that has been transpiring for decades. Why are we still having that same conversation?
You know, I think part of the challenge is, I was just talking to someone about this the other day, is that the stigma associated with being in foster care, we need to unlearn the things that we have internalized about who gets sent to foster care. I think there are lots of dominant images in media that present youth in foster care as incorrigible, as deviant, as, you know, youth who did something to be placed in foster care versus, you know, them by no way, you know, but sort of being placed in a vulnerable situation to be in care, essentially.
And by no choice of their own. You know, one thing that I have always heard growing up in various circles is we don't choose our families. We don't choose what family that we're born into. And the children that are in foster care did not choose to be there.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, it's a difficult topic to discuss. I was reading an article recently within the last couple of days that said studies indicate that children who, I guess, graduate out of the foster care system within 2 years are incarcerated. Many of them, I think it was 2 out of 10, but even 2 is too many.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, part of what we've been learning from research is that, you know, of the 400,000 youth in foster care, only about 50% of them will graduate from high school. And of that 50%, only about 20% will enroll in college, and less than 3% will earn a bachelor's degree. Now, when you look at the aspirations of youth and whether or not they're aspiring to attain college, they aspire to attain college or pursue college at rates that are higher than their non-foster care peers. So there's something that's happening structurally and systemically that's sort of providing barriers and challenges for them to successfully matriculate through the educational pipeline.
How do we address that disconnect?
Yeah, part of the challenge is raising awareness. So Foster Care Awareness Month is May, and it's an opportunity to really bring national attention to some of these challenges that I think so many people are, quite frankly, unaware of. And for those of us who work in education like me, you know, in higher ed in particular, I think, you know, folk college professors and faculty don't see this as sort of an issue that they ought to be concerned about. I think education systems, organizations have an institutional responsibility to meet the needs of young people in care. And part of that is raising awareness about some of the challenges that they do experience.
So, you know, since this is a faith-based podcast and we really don't shy away from that, I have to ask, what role does the church play in all of this?
Yeah, I think the church has to play a role in this. Now, you know, we didn't talk about this yet, but fictive kinship is something that is very important and something that we don't sort of talk about, but it happens in Black communities. It happens to the Black church where families and friends of families intervene to provide support for a young person who's, you know, experiencing some difficulty at home. Their parents can't provide care. I think, you know, that's sort of one way in which we've seen churches can help keep kids from being placed in the foster care system by intervening and, you know, helping to provide them a safe house as well.
Tell us a little bit about your journey and when you knew that this was your calling. Because I know on the podcast we've talked about the difference between a calling and a career and a hobby.
Mm-hmm. So I thought I wanted to be a lawyer, and I majored in political science at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. I don't think it was serendipity that I got connected with some amazing graduate students who were already studying issues related to education policy. And, you know, they encouraged me at the last minute to apply for a master's program in education policy. And it was the best thing that I could have done because it put me on a different sort of trajectory. And I always tell people, you know, the most difficult decisions I have ever made in my personal or professional life have been the best, because it was those opportunities that pushed me beyond my own sort of comfort zone. And it allowed me to get connected to the inner voice in me, the spiritual voice, to sort of see how, where I was sort of being called to do. And so for the last 10 years, I've been engaged in this work, not really even sure initially why I was being called to do research on our most underrepresented and underserved populations. But, once you know something, you're responsible for it. And so now that I know better and I know what we ought to be doing to serve young people better, I feel sort of committed and called to do that in my work that I do now.
What's been your most inspiring encounter in your field?
Most inspiring encounter. I've had lots of amazing mentors who have stood in the gap for me, who've stepped up to to provide instrumental forms of support. I wouldn't be a professor had it not been for amazing Black men in my life who role modeled for me what it meant to be a scholar, what it meant to be a man of faith. My doctoral advisor, Terrell Strayhorn, was someone who directed the choir on Sunday, taught classes on Tuesday, advised his graduate students on Wednesday. It was an amazing example for me of what it means to show up in your fullness. And especially in a field and an academy that devalues you bringing your sort of authentic self. So to me, I think that that's a really powerful experience, having someone live in their sort of truth and role model for you what it means to be a professional in that way.
So in your space and in your industry, you have a front row seat to essentially the generation that is going to shape our future. Are you optimistic?
I am so optimistic. I mean, the way in which my students show up and challenge systems of oppression, speak back to power, it's so inspiring. You know, I think lots of folks think that this generation is still millennials. I'm a millennial, but this generation behind millennials thinks Gen Z or something. They've been sort of reared in a different world than so many of us. Yes, the students are so comfortable living their authentic selves, embracing who they are, and speaking back to systems of oppression and power. And it's so encouraging.
It is encouraging, and that definitely warms my heart. I'm right on the cusp of a millennial. I think I'm the last year that the millennials were born. So I'm right on the cusp, but I'm holding on. You know, there's a lot to be encouraged by. Is there something that you are discouraged by?
Yeah, you know, I avoid watching the news. I used to be...
Wait a minute.
I used to watch cable news every single day. And there was something, you know, when the COVID, the pandemic happened, there was something really saddening about seeing the ticker and the number increase every day of folks who were being impacted by COVID, folks who were dying to COVID, and having had family members impacted and close friends who passed due to COVID. It was really discouraging to see the way our country is sort of grappling with this pandemic and its impact on so many sectors of folks' lives. So that's been really discouraging right now.
You know, it was really tough, and it's something that we all navigated. And I always say it sounds so cliche to say, oh, it was, you know, unprecedented times, but it really, really was. And that's kind of the phrase that comes to mind, you know, with it being Foster Care Awareness Month. I can only imagine that the coronavirus pandemic had daunting impact on our foster care system. How do you come back from that?
Yeah, you know, I am a higher education scholar primarily. And when colleges and universities decided to close their campuses at the height of the sort of pandemic to mitigate the spread of the of COVID, what they did is they created basic needs and securities for students who didn't have permanent residence to go back to a home, who didn't have access to food, who didn't have access to mental health support. And so there's a lot that we need to do to even just be sort of aware of how our actions affect particular populations and groups. And so that's what I'm really committed to doing in the work that I do as a scholar. I'm really trying to bring awareness to those who are most underserved by systems and structures and higher education in particular.
Did we come back from that catastrophe, really? The students who didn't have anywhere to go, where college was their, you know, opportunity and their refuge, did we come back from that? Are we still coming back from that?
I think we're still coming back from, and we'll see the reverberations of it for a while. You know, students didn't have access to technology to even, you know, high speed Wi-Fi to be able to complete assignments or even have a laptop. So I think there's a lot of things that, you know, the pandemic brought to surface for educators in particular that I hope now that we know and are aware that we're responsible for it and we can do things differently so that students have the supports that they need in ways that they did not and currently don't have for so many.
What would you say is the biggest misconception about foster care?
I think part of the challenge is the stigma associated with being in foster care, that there have been these dominant messages and images about young people and why they get placed in foster care. You know, we construct them as incorrigible. We construct them as dangerous and deviant, that they did something to be placed in foster care, as we sort of mentioned earlier. I think that's a really dangerous perception. And when we sort of accept that as truth, we don't feel responsible for helping to support them, that they're sort of making autonomous decisions to get in trouble, to be deviant, to be placed in the foster care system, whereas that they sort of were in a situation by no fault of their own and exposed to abuse and neglect. You know, there are a wide range of reasons why people get placed in foster care, but I think that dominant sort of image prevents folks from taking action.
And what would you say is the biggest accolade in terms of where we've had victories over the last year, several years?
As it relates to the foster care system or?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, so many states currently are and have done passed legislation that extends the time in which you can spend in care, that they can sort of benefit from the support of the state, financial support of the state. So in most states, youth aged out of foster care at 18. By aging out, I'm meaning they sort of arrived at the age of 18 in most cases, where the state has deemed them an adult and that they can fend for themselves. Now, we know most 18-year-olds cannot do that, right? Especially most 18-year-olds who've been exposed to abuse, neglect, and haven't had consistent support from adults. And so lots of states now are, because they're becoming increasingly aware of the challenges of youth in foster care, that they're extending care to 21 to 23 years of age, which is wonderful. It provides a bit of a buffer for youth to emerge into adulthood. Because what we know is that those who age out of the foster care system are most likely to experience homelessness, most likely to experience teen pregnancy, school dropout, et cetera. So having that buffer time is really important to their success.
Dr. Johnson, everyone who comes on the Good Word podcast, we always ask them to share and leave us with a message. We ask, what would you say is the good word?
Yeah, I would say the good word for the day is to extend grace to others, but most importantly to ourselves in this moment. I think many of us are grappling with how best to show up in the spaces that we are expected to show up. To what extent do we show up as ourselves? How do we manage all of the competing priorities? I think we ought to just take a moment to stop, breathe, and give some grace to ourselves, especially to others as well.
I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. And for people who want to follow your journey and learn more from what you were doing, how you were doing it, where can they find you?
Yeah, please connect with me on Twitter, Royel Johnson, R-O-Y-E-L Johnson. You can also connect with me at my website, www.royeljohnson.com.
And before we go, where would you say the most amount of help is needed for people who are listening to this and they say, well, I want to help. I want to do something. I can give back. I can do more. Where should they start?
So one of the things that I always recommend, so there's something called court-appointed special advocates. And these are volunteer roles for people who have sort of the bandwidth. They are appointed by a juvenile court. And ultimately, you have an opportunity to build a relationship with a young person in care, but also as you learn more about them, you're positioned to be able to legally advocate on their behalf to make sure that they get the requisite supports and needs that they need as they sort of matriculate through the foster care system. So court-appointed special advocate, if you Google it, plus whatever your state you're in, that's an opportunity to a meaningful volunteer role.
Dr. Royel Johnson, thank you so much. Thank you for joining us on the Good Word podcast. And everyone, please be sure to subscribe. We're on iTunes and Audioboom and Google Play and everywhere the podcasts play. And we also have a very robust Facebook group. Just go to Facebook and search The Good Word. Dr. Johnson, thanks again.
Thank you so much.